Well, hello. Hopefully at the end of this line, we've got Danny Carter. How are you, Danny?
I'm fine, man. How are you, mate? You okay?
Yes, we've had a few technical problems tonight, but hopefully, this time round, our interview will work. And I think it's about our fourth attempt, isn't it? Something like that. But,
well, luckily we're in lockdown. I could be out gallivanting, couldn't I?
You could be. Right, well, how's life in Barry in the Vale of Glamorgan, isn't it?
Yes, it's very good. It's lovely. We've got... We live in a nice place by the sea, some good people around us. It's all good. And with the lockdown at the minute, all my family are under one roof, so we're making the best of a bad situation, I think.
Yeah, well, we'll find out how you ended up in Barry as the conversation takes place. But let's have a look at how a Hackney lad ends up with Brighton and Hove Albion to start his career. How did that come around?
Oh, yeah, it's funny, really. Well, from the age of 11, I was picked up by Arsenal and I was there until I was 15. And then, the first contract you had to sign with the club was schoolboy forms. And my two managers at the time were Terry Murphy and Terry Burton, who went on to manage Cardiff and that. And they just said, unfortunately, they wanted me to stay on, but I couldn't sign a schoolboy form contract because I was too small. So, surprisingly, George Petchy, who had a big link with Leighton Orient, decided to, all the London lads that had been released by the London clubs, he decided to take them up to make a team to play Brighton Hove Albion, where he was assistant manager to Chris Catton at the time, and we went up there, and we played a couple of games, and we trained with him, and then he offered me a three-year contract. So I had a year schoolboy and a two-year apprenticeship, but while we were schoolboys there, we won the League Cup. So we beat West Ham in two legs, so they expected big things of us.
They did, but so you made your debut at Brighton, was it, in the 86, 87?
No, I didn't actually play. I played it in the pre-season friendlies, my final year under Alan Mullery. But I didn't actually, I played up front with Dean Saunders, believe it or not. So, but I didn't actually play a first team game.
Now, Alan Mullery is a person that I know. Dicko tells me that he was his boss for a little while, and he said that he used to say, "Well, it was 2-0 when I came off."
Definitely.
Is that the sort of, because he always referred to the England West Germany.
He held the call. He said his bugbear was you could never say on TV that it was him that marked Pelé, not Bobby Moore.
So he was a class act though as a player. So we give him that.
He was good to me. Chris Catlin was very good to me, and then he lost his job when they brought in Alan Murray, who was a hero at Brighton, and he was very good to me. It just didn't work out at that time, purely because halfway through the season he got the sack.
Yeah.
So my contract came out, and Barry Lloyd at the time then decided that I wasn't good enough, which was his opinion, and that's how it was.
So you went off to Billericay for a season?
No, I didn't. That was the thing. It was interesting. My final year at Brighton, the goalkeeping coach at Brighton was Peter Benetti.
Right.
And in my final season in the youth team, we played Chelsea three times. And the manager of Chelsea at the time was a guy called Gwyn Williams.
Yeah.
And when Peter Benetti found out that I'd been released, he spoke to Gwyn, and Gwyn contacted me and said, would I be interested in playing abroad? So I said, well, I'm happy to give anything, really. I haven't got anything. And he sorted out, and I played in Sweden for a year in a second division side called IF Nornan in a place called Malung. And then when I came back from Sweden, Gwyn phoned me up and said, would I fancy going to train with Orient because it's on my doorstep? And that's how I got into Orient. I spoke to Frank. I trained a few times. And then Frank said, well, we can't offer you anything now, but would you fancy going out to grow up a bit of men's football, and then hopefully we'll have a look at you again and see what we can do. And that's how I went to Billericay.
Right, so you did well at Billericay. Obviously, you was drawing a bit of attention there. Were there any other offers for you other than Orient?
But apparently, I played a game that the manager at the time was Brian Moffitt. He was very good to me. He was an old left-back that played for non-league England. He was a hard man. And he taught me how to toughen up a bit, and that, well, not basically toughen up, but how to take a kick and get up and you keep going. And he said there was a game, we were playing a midweek game, and he said, you need to be on it today. And being naive, 19, you don't really know what that means. But there was a few inquiries from Fulham and I think Brentford. And I think Orient got wind of that because I came in on the Monday and then they told me to play a reserve game against Tottenham the following day. And I did. I did okay, I scored, and then Frank offered me a year's contract.
Right, so that got you signed for the start of the 88-89 season, would that have been, I think, yeah.
That was it, yeah.
And that was obviously a very memorable season for the club.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was, you know, for me being a first-year pro, there was me, Ian Rawlins and Hackham. We were the three young pros. And it was a good schooling because on Thursdays the youth team used to go back to college and then us three used to work with Jimmy Allibone, get all the stuff ready, and obviously there was Kevin Campbell there. But it was good for me, and because in that season, Alan was having a bad time. He didn't see eye to eye with Brian and Dick at all. And it was interesting for me. He helped me to grow up as a young man, to see how someone like him was getting a lot of stick, but he didn't buy it. He got through it. And then when Kevin Campbell came in, the whole season then turned.
It did indeed. I mean, you were in that squad. I always say the one outstanding match that I remember isn't so much the playoff final, it's the semi-final, second leg at Scarborough. And you were in that squad that went up there that night, weren't you?
Yeah, it was interesting. I played all season and travelled with the team, but I didn't make the bench until the last game against Scunthorpe, and I got on for about 30 seconds and I was running around like an idiot trying to touch the ball. And then I was sub with Ian Durie for the first leg. And I remember coming on, and that's the only time me and Alan was on the same field, because he was winning 1-0 and he put me on and we played four up front, and Frank said, just go for it. And we scored to make it 2-0. But the return leg, he put Paul Ward and Alan Hull on the bench because he said he wanted to go for a bit more defensive, Frank said.
Right, did you?
So me and Dukie was sitting in the stand laughing to ourselves.
Well, it was one of those nights, wasn't it? I think I always said it was like the Alamo, but with a happy ending. I mean, it was...
It was, yeah. We actually, Dicko was straight as a die, and he was brilliant to me as a young pro. And I don't think they should have probably won. Looking at it, Hildy was outstanding, but it was literally backs to the wall. I don't think we got near...
I don't think we got out of our own half, did we?
They really went for it. And after the game, we had Warnock walking around telling everyone if he was still the manager, we'd have knocked us out. But, you know, that's Neil Warnock, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think Kevin Dickinson, we can't really repeat what he said to Neil Warnock on the phone, can we?
No, because it was very interesting. I was sitting next to Dicko when Mr. Warnock said he would sign him. And I won't tell you what the guy said back to him.
Yeah, he's pretty unprintable, wasn't it? But suffice to say, he's not the sort of person that he'd sign for. I think it's pretty...
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Considering where he went on from there, maybe Dicko might think to himself, I should have said to him, yeah, where's the dotted line? Because I think he would have had a few moves out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I know Warnock from when I worked in the West Country doing ITV down there for a few years. And the thing with Neil is, if he's your club, he's fantastic, you know?
Yes.
And I think players run through brick walls for him. But if he's one of those people that if you're the opposition, he annoys the hell out of you. But
yes.
If he's your man, he's great. Yeah.
You know, so. Oh, yes, because he was very interesting because he got the knock advantage, didn't he?
Yeah.
And we played them first game of the season at home, and he was in the dugout, wasn't he? And they beat us.
They 1-0.
Yeah. And I remember coming on. That was my. I come on for Wardy that day, and then I remember Warnock said to Charlie Palmer, "I want him in the stand." And Dicko then told him another word we can't repeat.
Yeah, that's so unlike Kevin, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
Butter wouldn't melt. Butter wouldn't melt.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
We had ups and downs during your career, Orient. Obviously, the club hit financial trouble and, you know, the chairman, obviously, with the Rwanda situation, we all know what happened there. And so you've done personally very well because you won the Player of the Year, didn't you?
Yeah, it was interesting because my very first season, I started very well. My first full league debut was, I think, Preston at home, maybe. But I played against Gillingham on the Tuesday night in the Littlewoods Cup. And then I went on a bit of a run and I was doing okay. Then I picked up an injury. And then I kind of lost my way a bit the first season. And then basically John Gorman got hold of me. And I came back in the side. And I think I scored about four goals in the last seven games, and we stayed up. So, you know, I turned the season around. That was down to John Gorman. And that was the season, obviously, I scored against Everton and all stuff like that. But that season, I think I got stitches in my head at Northampton. I came on with a band around my head. And everyone said the left back thought I was still in there because he passed it straight to me and we won 1-0. So that was the turning point of my career that I thought, I then thought to myself, I've got a chance to being okay. I thought I could compete because it was a hard act to follow following Alan.
Yeah. You touched on the Everton game there, but I mean, that was a 2-2 draw at Goodison Park and people still talk about your goal. And I know I've been asked to ask you, have you got a copy of the film of that goal?
No, I haven't. It's quite annoying, really. But you know, yeah, it was a massive point in my career because we went in 1-0, and obviously the turning point, which is quite interesting that a lot of fans don't know, is that John Gorman was very good friends with Dale Gleish and Graham Souness.
Right.
And they were both there, and they spoke to John, and they both come to watch me on the Friday night against Tranmere, and I don't think I touched the ball. And it was interesting because John used to say, Dalglish always used to say, he said, how'd that young boy do that scored that well at Everton? And it's interesting because everyone always mentions that goal, but that season, everyone says it's your best goal. But I actually, that same year, when I went on that run, I scored a volley against Swansea to beat them 1-0. And then on the last game of the season, I scored another volley against Fulham. So them two were like vital goals because I just got back in the team and we went on a run with Paul Beasley and we stayed up. I'm not sure how many points we stayed up by, but I scored against Rotherham and I think it was our first goal for something like 300 odd minutes.
Yeah.
We went a real long time without scoring and then we didn't lose a game. We drew 0-0 with Bolton, we beat Northampton, we beat Swansea. We then beat Fulham the last day and Fulham needed to beat us to stay up. It was a packed, it was red hot day, it was roasting. It was actually Brian Eastick's last game with the club.
Right. And that was a memorable one. But for you personally, when the managerial change came again, when Eustace went, you and John Sitton obviously ended up with you leaving the club, despite being a player of the year and a player's player of the year. I mean, how did that transpire?
Season, I'd come back from injury and it was interesting, they were playing 3-5-2 and I came back in the team and they played me midfield three, or we played three up front, we kind of played orthodox, and I did, you know, I did really well and won all the player of the years. The following year Peter got rid of all the Lee Harvey, Dicko, Kevin, they all went and brought in a new influx of players, Colin West, Gary Barnett, and we were favourites to do really well, Trevor Putney, and that season I think I scored 9 goals and I got players player of the year and Ian Bowie got player of the year. And then obviously my contract ran out and in between then Chris Turner and John Seaton took over. The club wanted to offer me a 1-year contract on exactly the same money. And at that time there, we all know there was players on really good money
yeah.
for Orient.
Yeah.
And I just said to him, I don't think, I've been here a long time, I've never earned decent money. I don't, you know, what I've done for the club and being double player of the year, to offer me a year and the same money, I refused it, and that's when me and Terry was made out to be these players that don't want to sign for the club in difficult times and all stuff like that, which wasn't really true.
Nah, so obviously it ended up with you making the move to Peterborough.
Yes, yeah, I spoke to Patsy when Patsy got the job. They tried to keep me, and I'd spoken to Barry Hearn, but I think at that particular time, Barry was looking to see that everyone should be on the same money. And I think he was quite new into football. So basically, he had a template of what he wanted to pay players. Patsy was desperate for me to stay. I was happy to stay. But then Peterborough came in and offered money. And I met John Steele. I didn't particularly want to play in the fourth division. Peterborough were in the third division. And I signed for Peterborough.
And you had a fair few games for them. You played pretty much the whole season, didn't you?
Yeah, it was interesting because John Steele resigned after game 12. Which was interesting. I'd moved, we'd moved into our new house on the Thursday and John Steele resigned on the Saturday.
A good timing.
We played Brentford. Yeah, and then I came in and Mick Hassell took over and Mick pulled me in and said, he didn't fancy me. And then I said, oh, fair enough. And then 2 weeks later, he pulled me in and he said, my mistake. He said, I want you to play. And that season, I did okay. Considering it was all new, I'd been following a long time, man. It was my doorstep, and then basically you get moved, it's different players, it's different environment. But we had an okay team, and then we did okay, and then Barry Fry came in and decided that 15th wasn't good enough, and he wanted to get rid of all of the players.
So you made a massive move. I mean, what took you all the way to Barry?
Well, it was interesting, really. When I got the free transfer from Peterborough, because Barry Fry said, would I stay for a year? And I made up my mind, because my wife, Joan, hated Peterborough. She didn't want to settle there, so we wanted to cut back home. And John Steele had got the Barnet job. And me and John had spoken several times, and the deal was near enough over the line. And then at the last minute, it fell through. So I was kind of in limbo. I trained with Cardiff because Kevin Nugent was there, and Phil Neal, who was the Peterborough assistant manager, knew Russell Osman. And they asked me earlier in the season, did I want to go? And I said, no, I want to go back to London. I miss London and stuff like that. So that didn't work out. And then Gary Barnett phoned me and said, did I fancy coming to Barry to play European football? And I kind of thought to myself, well, I wasn't sure. Then Wickham Wanderers' John Gregory phoned me and said, would I come? He'll give me a month-to-month contract. And I'd had a baby, and my wife was pregnant with my husband at the time. And I just thought I couldn't just shake a chance at a month-to-month. So I met Gary. We had a good chat. And I signed a year's contract with Barry Town.
And really, that took you down to Wales, where you stayed, long, long association with Merthyr.
Yeah, I had two fantastic years at Barry. You know, we played in the Champions League, and I'll never forget them games. You know, we played Dynamo Kiev, who were that year. They went on to get to the semi-final. They lost to Juventus on penalties, and then all the great players left. So Rebrov, Shevchenko, Kiglansky, all of their players that went on to be amazing players. And then we played Valletta, the Champions of Malta, and the music plays when you come out. You know, it was a fantastic experience. But at the time there, I started to look to see my career, what would happen when I finished football. And at that previous, I was doing a two-year sports and Swedish massage course. And then when I decided I wanted to leave Barry and Gary Barnett went to Kidderminster, I could have joined him at Kiddie, but I did the travelling and stuff like that. So Merthyr spoke to me, and Merthyr offered me a good contract and gave me a chance to study. So I've played there for six seasons. I was captain for three of them seasons. We had a couple of promotions. And then I was joint manager for another six seasons. So yeah. I was there a long time.
So you're not actually involved in the game now?
No. I've been out of the game for about 4 years now. We got two promotions and we lost back-to-back playoff finals. And the two of us, we'd been there a long time. And I kind of put my family first. Take a back seat, and obviously with my career outside of football was going really well, and I decided it was time to put the belts and the ball away.
Any aspirations to get back into it now you've had 4 years?
Definitely not.
No? You don't miss it?
No, I don't miss it. I don't miss it at all.
So your world now is a world away from football. Perhaps you just explain what you do now.
Yeah, what it is, I've been, for 18 years, I worked in a very special place. It was a scope school called Craiger Park, which worked with children aged between 4 and 19 with cerebral palsy, which is a lack of oxygen to the brain, which then causes a disability, lack of function with the limbs and stuff like that. And it was a fantastic place, and it was a place that made me become the man I am now, to recognise how fortunate I was as a footballer, and you know, and I kind of treated them as I would treat my own son, and basically it was my probably destiny to work with children like that.
And you find that obviously is a very fulfilling career, really, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic. Every day when I worked there, I was blessed. You know, you go in, you know, to be a professional footballer for 15 years, semi-professional for 7 years, and work with these kind of children. I felt myself, I'm very fortunate. I'm no longer at the school. The school had gone a different angle. I got made redundant last year. But fortunately, I'm still in the field. One of my old colleagues runs his own company. And we take on medical negligence cases. So basically, he takes over the whole case and works out a therapy system for a young adult or a man or a lady that needs therapy in some capacity. And I drive around all of the whole of Wales now, and I see possibly 10 to 15 clients set up their programs room, if it's hydrotherapy, if it's physio, if it's massage, if it's behaviour. And it's a whole holistic approach just to make sure that they get what they need. So at the minute now, I've got a couple of clients I'm seeing due to their therapy is essential. So basically, I see a couple of them a week, which I'm in my car quite a bit, but it's very rewarding. You meet some special people, Ed.
Yeah, and your parents. So I think a lot of people that remember you at the Orient remember your mum and dad turning up week in, week out. Very, very supportive of you, obviously.
Yes, definitely.
I understand your dad's now passed away, but your mum's still with us.
Yes. My dad passed away 8 years ago. Unfortunately, he had senile dementia. My mum was his main carer, which was a loss to us. But 2 years ago, my mum got diagnosed with vascular dementia, which attacks just the blood on the brain. And there's no treatment for that. So basically, she has no medication. But about 18 months ago, when she lived in Norwich, because they both moved to look after my sister's children in Norwich, and she was wandering the streets of Norwich. So bless her, my wife, fair play to her, she took the decision. We went to see her. My sister put her in a home to see for short term because she was on emergency placement. And we decided as a family, we met as a family and we sat down with my children. And I converted my garage, which is connected to my house, and we decided to she'll move in with us.
Excellent.
Yeah, so she's been with us 15 months now. So she moved in with us last Christmas.
And that's all going well?
It's going okay.
You have your moments.
So basically, I get up in the morning and I wake her up, I shower her, I get ready, the day centre pick her up. She's there till 3. My wife then picks her up. She then gets her tea. She settles her down. Then I come over from work and then I'll put her to bed. Medication and stuff like that. So basically, that's the day-to-day things. But unfortunately, Anne, you know, Stevie's dad had it. There's, I think, Terry Howard's dad.
Terry got it. Yeah.
It's just one of them. The downside of it, we didn't do it for gratification and stuff like that. But the only thing that's a shame about it is that she doesn't know that she must have done something right for her family to be looking after her. That's the only sad bit. She kind of knows who we are. I don't think she knows that I'm her son.
And did Dad play football or not?
Dad played semi-pro at quite a high level.
Yeah.
So he played for Chelmsford and in the Eastern League and stuff like that. So
there was no, was there any, you know, link to the football with the dementia or not?
Well, I don't know. My mum always said that he had quite a bad concussion when they first got married and he had bleeding from the ears, and she remembers sitting in the hospital with him, and he was in hospital for about 3 days. But obviously, in them days, he then came out and goes to work, and you carry on.
Yeah.
So that's a bit alarming. But also for myself, Andy, is that both my parents have got it, and I remember at Orient, I had two bad concussions where I was admitted. I think the worst one was Bournemouth. We played Bournemouth in the Sherpa van, and I remember Dave Watson come towards me, and I headed the ball, and then he headed me, and then I woke up in the hospital. And I didn't play for 10 days. I was one of the first players that wasn't allowed to play.
Yeah, it's automatic now, isn't it? You know, so.
Yes, it was interesting because I remember at the time that you didn't feel that bad, but luckily for me, Peter Eustace used to tell us a story, and he was very good with concussion because I think one of his players at Sheffield Wednesday got knocked out in a game and then started vomiting on the bus hours later.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he was pretty supportive at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had, oh no, it was not concussion, was it? I think Matt Lockwood had a spleen, I think ruptured spleen, if I remember rightly, on the bus. And that was another one that could have been very nasty indeed.
Yeah, I think, Andrew, in the modern game, I think that's the one thing that's really improved. You know, we were very lucky that Bill Sires and Dr. Bees was very high level for the standard we were playing in. Yeah. We had good medical care. But I can remember now that, you know, you literally, you know, me and Lee Harvey would get kicked lumps out of each other and basically the ref would tell you to get up.
Yeah, they did then, didn't they?
Yes.
But I think it's definitely a great thing you're doing, Danny, with your mum and obviously and with your career as well. You know, as you know, Dave Victor, which you remember Dave Victor, he works very much with people with disabilities as well. So you know, a lot in common with Dave there as well. He's got that school in Stevenage he runs. But I'm really pleased you took the time to speak to us all tonight, Danny. And I'm sure everybody from Orient wishes you all the best and enjoy your life down there. And at this time of year, at the moment, obviously stay safe and stay healthy, all of you. And thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, You're welcome, mate. It's a pleasure. And good luck to everyone and everyone out there. You stay safe and get your family close to you.
Thanks, Danny. Bye-bye now.
Take care, fella. Bye-bye.